This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
He is waiting, and I am riding his coattails. I'm John Pollock. Here we are. Another week. More Dynamite. Lots of wrestling. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You asked me that question twice on these broadcasts. Once on the XL edition, and then once we get over that into the free side of things.
I've got to give the YouTubers something. They want to know.
No, I appreciate it, because I notice a change in my energy,
yeah, definitely,
and my mood, and I feel the same for you too, right, John? Like, maybe less so when it comes to like your broadcast voice, because I think you're very good, but I do notice some change, and that's all to say we had a great news pack in our XL edition this week, John.
It's really how we warm up, I think.
Yeah,
we had 40 minutes that we just went through, the passing of Bobby Duncombe Sr. We also discussed the Trey Miguel situation at length, Tommaso Ciampa on his way out of WWE, Booker T on NXT Tuesday night. That was something. And looking at New Japan as well, the future of Evil, their new beginning in Osaka card. A lot of interesting news going on in and around New Japan. I will say they have certainly maintained a buzz for me, at least post Wrestle Kingdom. I really enjoyed the Korakuen and Hall shows this week, and they've got some like interesting lineups, and there's a number of guys that have been stepping up. It's going to be a tough year for them, but I was very happy with the shows that they had this week, but it's going to be a long road ahead this coming year.
Well, they lost Evil, so
he went out with
a bang, did he not? What a great match he went out with.
Oh, the Aaron Wolf one. Yeah, I mean, he has been on some of these small Road 2 shows. You could argue, like, it was a reminder that this has been a gimmick a lot of people have hated, but this is a great wrestler. Like, he's a really, talented wrestler that has been mired by a character and gimmick and trope that New Japan has fallen in love with, and it's just...
WWE just, has as well.
I guess so, yes.
Maybe.
So all of that can be heard on the XL portion of Rewind to Dynamite that all Post Wrestling Cafe members have access to. But we will spare no more time. We have to get to tonight's show from the Edition Financial Arena in Orlando. 4,227 tickets distributed from WrestleTix. This would be their largest TV crowd since Blood and Guts on November the 12th. So they had a good movement of tickets over this last week, whether it was the announcement of a Kenny Omega match or just movement in Orlando. It was a healthy crowd by Impact standards. And boy, what a...
AEW standards. Not
sorry,
Impact
sorry.
Standards.
Impact would be very happy with this as well. So first up is AEW announcing tonight that due to impending weather conditions in the region, Collision on Saturday at the Esports Stadium in Arlington, Texas, has been canceled. Impacted fans will receive an email with instructions for a refund in the next 24 to 48 hours. So on the fly here, they have to tape Collision tonight. So they ended When those graphics started showing up, I was wondering, they had announced Mark Briscoe and El Clone for Saturday, and that's all they had announced before tonight. That match got moved to next Wednesday. I was wondering if Tony was literally booking Collision as Dynamite was going on.
I guess it would just be amazing if he had to do that. And hopefully we find out later whether or not that's actually the case. But because you got to fly people in. for these shows, right? So like,
all he had was the people who were here at Dynamite to be used for right. Collision. Like that's all he had access to. Like they did not make this announcement until like right before Dynamite. I imagine maybe mid afternoon they saw what the weather situation was. I mean, it would have taken a lot for them to make this call, but you know, probably the right choice for them if this was going to be a potential weather disaster for them in Arlington on the weekend. But yeah. that's a late night. Like, this is an East Coast show. So, like, this crowd was not that hot in Orlando, and they still had two more hours to sit through of Collision afterward. So, I don't know what that's going to sound like, but they were pressed up against it, and they had to crank out a Collision tonight as well.
Yeah, under these sort of like, I guess, very unusual circumstances, I guess I'm actually a bit more curious to watch the show now because, I mean, you know, I wonder if the roster will just kind of feel a certain, like, you know, different way knowing that they were like bailing out the company really essentially with the show, with working double duty in some cases. So, all right.
Fightful also reported that Will Ospreay was backstage tonight to be evaluated. But it noting it's still very early in the process. He had surgery in September, neck surgery, that is. And so, I mean, at least we will see. He's going to be one of the big stories for AEW this whole year and when he can come back. And I mean, you have surgery in September. I mean, it's like to be coming back for, you know, that's usually like close to a year. So, I mean, everyone's going to be circling like it's almost the 1 year mark, but that's, you know, to be wrestling like a high end Will Ospreay level match at Wembley Stadium. I mean, a lot. They also, just in case this crowd didn't have enough, they also taped three dark matches, one of which featured the former Baron Corbin, Bishop Dyer, who wrestled in an 8-man tag match. As well, in a separate match, Stephen Borden, the son of Sting, was also in a tag match teaming up with QT Marshall. So those were
interesting.
The notable names in Orlando on Wednesday night. One name who was not in Orlando was Jim Ross. He was originally assigned for this show, but he informed people he suffered a fall at his house and was apparently down on his floor at his home for 5 hours and could not travel for this show. So, man, he's had a lot of falls at his house over these last couple of years, man. And it's... you know, he has been through the ringer health wise.
To say the least, it's very concerning. And like, I wonder if like at this point, like it's something that I'm grateful that he's public about it by giving us, you know, a reason for it. But like, he has to know that people are probably a lot more concerned about his just well being by these repeated incident, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know, I wonder like what sort of like if there's any sort of intervention, if there's like, you know, because just something, because this feels really like it feels unusual to me, right?
It's hard to say, right? Like you know, he's dealing with a lot of health issues. It's like I don't know, it's unfortunate. Taz was back on the show tonight. He'd been gone for several months, so he was on the broadcast with Excalibur and Tony Schiavone. No Bryan Danielson tonight. And the show began...
I wonder if they'll be going with more of an alternating sort of like Taz, Tony, Danielson type of like, you know, setup from this point on.
And after Danielson did that interview about like how his neck was like really feeling it from all this travel, I wonder if that kind of triggered like, you know, this guy should probably not be traveling every single week to
these
shows.
Same with Taz. Like,
I mean, this guy's had, yeah, this was what, shoulder surgery that he's coming back, or with this knees? He's had a few surgeries, I think. Mm-hmm. So,
and honestly, like maybe having a rotating panel like that might actually benefit the broadcast rather than having two analysts provide a similar role on the show. Because, you know, even though I thought they smoothed things over, like, you know, in the sort of like latter stages of the combination, I don't know if like you need two analysts, right?
Yeah. maybe Shivani's like, how about me? No, you're going to be on every broadcast we do. You're going to do Collision. Yeah. You're going to do Dynamite. Like, Shivani probably did 4 hours on this show. You know what? I bet you they didn't even have Nigel for Collision. Like, that, why would he have been here? So these guys probably did 4 hours.
Maybe Moxley commentary. Maybe Moxley called Collision or something.
Maybe. Did you see that Renee did her next sit down interview is with her daughter?
Oh, no way. Wow.
She posted a clip of this. I don't know if there's it's a full extended interview, but she put a clip of this up and I was like, wow, this is that is quite something.
I'm curious to check it out. All right, what is she going to ask her? Like, you know,
the hard-hitting questions.
Yeah.
Like I hope she wasn't watching her dad take a tax and glass tonight out of nowhere. Wouldn't want to react.
I'm
to
sure
that.
She's seen plenty. I mean, look at this photo that we just brought up here of like John Moxley covered in blood, taking a very lovely picture with her daughter Renee and also Marina. So I'm sure she's used to it.
So back to the show. Shivani brings out MJF at the beginning. He says he is the best wrestler on God's green earth, and I've got the proof, showing off his belt. Anyone else out there stating they're the best of the best, and it isn't me, then change the channel, because what's coming out of their mouth is the same thing coming out of their ass.
Yeah.
Phil.
Who?
That's what
I'm saying. Is this really it? Like, he says that every single week. I mean, that's his catchphrase.
I mean, he's addressing someone else holding a championship who claims they're the best of the best.
Okay.
I mean, this is one of those, like, you could certainly say, I wasn't talking about anyone specifically, but anyone could read between the lines of and take it that way.
And like, aren't they friends or, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it's just a promo. I wouldn't.
Yeah, to get people talking, sure. I guess why not, you know? Yeah.
He says, this is the year of the devil. Bandito was the first in a long line of losers. And he gets confronted by Brody King, who wants to punch a hole through his heart and rip his spleen out. I don't know. He got very technical here. And he is not going to do that because he wants a title match with MJF tonight. It's like, dude, did you not see the lineup? We've got 6 matches announced, and it's Dynamite, and we're starting it off with a promo segment. There's no room for this, not even on Collision. So MJF turns him down, says, you're all bark, no bite. Who have you beaten? Bunch of jobbers? You've got to work your way up. And not exactly wrong here. I mean, there's quite the lineup of contenders that are set up here. So Brody can, you know, take a number.
It is true. I suppose there's
still... He didn't come out here with a great, great strategy.
Well, I mean, it often works, believe it or not, in wrestling. You just come out and ask for a championship match, and you're bound to at least, like, be pushed towards the direction of getting it. I mean, it didn't necessarily...
He needed to... He should have watched Raw, and he would have had, are you scared?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That would have got it, the title match. So, this will happen at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I thought MJF delivered a really great opening promo here. Very flair-like and confident and smoothness of delivery. And overall, I thought the segment did a great job of putting Brody King into the spotlight of being your next title contender for MJF. Of course, you know, with Kenny and maybe even others looming, King feels like a TV title, like TV level challenger rather than a pay-per-view. So therefore, it'll be a bit hard to buy that he has any sort of chance of actually beating Max. But with the challenger like him, who's still, I think, very much on the cusp of, like, you know, breaking through to that next level, he could still gain a whole lot, you know, by simply having a great showing, having a great match, and maybe, again, just conditioning people to look at him as a title level contender. So in the promo here, I thought he still needed to maybe develop a little bit more of a sort of, like, you know, like, unique original voice that matches his intensity and, like, meanness in ring. I didn't really feel it on the mic here, but I mean, having a feud against MJF will give you great experience to get towards that.
Maybe if you call me up, your old teammate, I could give you some of my magic tips of how to communicate with the verbal poetry of combat.
See, sometimes I still have to, in my mind, figure out if you're doing Aleister Black or Jimmy Snuka. I'm like, did he team with Jimmy Snuka? Like, I don't remember.
Brody would,
brother, I'm gonna rip your spleen out your back.
Holy shit, I'm scared. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Anyway, let's
move on. Renee is with Hangman and Jetspeed. They go over names. They want to come up with a team name. The suggestion is made by Kevin Knight of Jet Set Rodeo. And then Mike Bailey.
Based on the video game.
What video game? I don't know.
Jet Set Radio, I believe.
Okay. All right. I
no,
didn't understand the reference.
From the 90s.
I'm old. And then Mike Bailey, who workshopped this on one of his streams, suggested Horsecock. And I am going to make a bold prediction that this is going to be AEW's version of the what chant. Because this chant, we got it like three separate times on this show, this chant of Horsecock. And I feel this is going to be the copycat chant that no opposition to any of these guys is going to want to deal with that chant.
You think
there was a moment where Swerve was like, the fuck are they chanting?
You think Horsecock is going to be the next what? Like people will randomly
dude,
break into.
These crowds are going to start chanting this. This is going to become a chant. It is. It was tonight, and this was from an Orlando crowd that was not all that enthusiastic. Wait till we get to some like hotter markets.
There's no doubt it'll be a chant. Like, I mean, I think it'll be these guys an official name. Like, I mean, it'll be their version of like Ass Boys, right? But like, I don't know if it'll permeate other programs on the show.
I'm gonna isolate this clip and we'll revisit it in a year.
Yeah, but I think Horsecock. the joke is really on us. It's on the podcasters and the recappers who have to constantly say Horsecock. Yeah.
Tony Storm came to Mike Bailey and said, "Hey, you want to do something funny?"
Yeah, but I guess it does tell you maybe like the difference in an AEW and WWE in that like. In WWE, they were trying so hard to get this whole jackass thing over as if it was like risque in some way, like, or at least just like somewhat taboo to call somebody a jackass. Yeah. Well, like the company that's willing to do like the bloody death matches, I guess to them, they draw the line, or at least like they think Horsecock kind of fulfills maybe that role a little better.
Yeah, I'm sure that the WBD executive in question, I'm sure he watched the segment and just was like, that's my programming. That's our standards.
Yeah, all clear.
January is your month to beat the price increase at the Post Wrestling Cafe. Before our regular tier jumps to $8, you have a chance to lock in the old existing price for all of 2026, but you've got to do it before February 1st. Also this month, we kick off our WWE Unreal Season 2 reviews with weekly releases covering each and every episode. We'll also be looking back at the Okada-Tanahashi feud dating back to 2012 with some of their most famous matches. Plus, Chris Jericho's A Lion's Tale will be the subject of this month's book club. All that and more is yours at postwrestlingcafe.com. Samoa Joe and Speedball Mike Bailey. They go over 15 minutes here, and Hook and Shibata came down to get involved, and Joe knocks Bailey to the floor, and Joe works over Bailey as the chant of Horsecock begins. Bailey lands a missile dropkick. He's using all of his kicks. Shibata then attacks him with these suplexes, dropping him on his knees. There's several rope breaks by Bailey as Joe is applying various submissions, going for the leg, and then Bailey comes back with the dreaded crane kick and then hits... he goes for Ultima Weapon, but Hook distracts him, preventing the move, and Bailey gets kicks off the buckle to counter the Coquina Clutch, and Shibata stops Bailey from climbing as Hook distracts the referee, and this leads to the Muscle Buster in 15 minutes and 19 seconds. So, Evil could have fit into this formula very seamlessly, but he's choosing a different path.
Well, I mean, if the horse of House of Torture might no longer be a thing, the
horse of torture,
the horse, there's another.
Maybe that's going to be the trio's name.
I was going to say the spirit of House of Torture certainly will live on in many heel factions like the Ops here. Who, I mean, this was a rehab match for Joe, but yeah, you were going to say.
I was going to say, did you observe the magic trick here? Hobbs just poof disappeared. Like there was not a mention of the guy. He's gone.
He went back to his home planet.
That was it.
And yeah, no mention of him. Like he just, he's just gone at this point. And are you like, does it offend you? Do you think they should have handled it differently?
It doesn't offend me because it's just, it's what you do with wrestlers that leave. I sometimes wonder if, like, if we are watching this as a television show, is it owed to at least tie up a character leaving? I think that it's, I'm not even going to say like it's lazy not to. It's just, there's no demand for it. It's just, this is what happens. You're going to a different company. People know that people just, like Ciampa just disappeared one day. And I just think in this like storytelling medium to at least you write off a character in some kind of a way that at least, I just find it odd that it's just, this is the way it's done, but
I guess we wonder how, like, again, how these negotiations actually went and like how much hope Tony held out until the very last minute. I mean, evidently the fact that they lost the championship in the way that they did suggests it was a very last minute type of thing, or at least, you know, something they had to kind of scramble to create, and maybe they didn't have enough time to write an angle. But like, could he have taken him out somehow with like a, I don't know.
What if there had been a snowstorm last Wednesday and last Wednesday's show couldn't have happened? The clock strikes midnight.
Then they would no longer have Trios Champions, I suppose.
We need you to lose the belt on your iPhone and send the footage over to us and just find someone in your area to pin you.
I think we get an AI version of Will Hobbs to drop the belt and that'd be it. Yeah. I thought the match was a lot of fun. It was a fun David Goliath type of matchup between Joe and Speedball. I think Speedball continues to show that he's like a top tier performer who probably should have been on this stage a long time ago, if not for, you know, his visa issues. Obviously, he's got a bit of a credibility issue right now because he's kind of slotted in as the guy to just like make others look good at the moment. But if he did more upset wins like he did in the C2, the crowd would be more than ready to accept it. So at the moment, I kind of see him more as like a TNT level championship guy as a ceiling. But, you know, maybe there's even further, you know, role for him to grow. I know the idea is to get heat, but I thought like it was a bit much seeing Shibata like do that much on the outside. Like, it kind of killed the immersion with like the referee being that distracted for so long.
It was a lot of it. It was the multiple distraction spots, and I feel it's probably comparable, but it does feel like AEW, they really lean on the referee distraction spots like a lot, and it was twice here. None of those issues applied to the next match, which we go right into. Six-man street fight with Jon Moxley, Daniel Garcia, and Wheeler Yuta against Hechicero, Lance Archer, and Rocky Romero. And we get right into it. Yuta, in the opening minute, takes a choke slam through the timekeeper's table, and they assume the man is dead. It continues their brawling all over the place. Archer looked really good here. He goes for a choke slam on Marina Shafir, who counters it into a triangle and then goes to his ankle. Credit to Archer here, who like really sold this for Marina, that I could see a lot of guys just being resistant to. And I thought he was great here. And it led, as she's going for the ankle lock, he's leaning over as Moxley comes into the shot with a cutter. Really nice sequence here. Then Archer, reviving his previous death matches that he had with Jon Moxley, slams Moxley through a table in the corner. And so Moxley pulls out his toys. He gets a barbed wire board that's got tacks and broken glass attached to it, but he is the one that ends up taking a choke slam on it, and his back just got wrecked from this. I mean, this looked horrendous. He had so many cuts on his back. He had like a 25 tacks lodged in his back. I was like, I don't think this street fight was we were expecting to go this level for a TV street fight.
At this point, I mean, I really feel like this sort of condition is more like of Jon Moxley's default state, you know? Like, everything we're seeing when he's not bleeding is sort of like an unusual Jon Moxley. When he's actually full of blood, that's his true self. Yeah.
It is his secret power. Then we have Pac come out on crutches, attacking Archer with the crutch. And then out of nowhere comes Claudio, who slams Archer into an electrical box by the entrance, and that explodes. Marina hits a low blow to Hechicero, and then Moxley puts Rocky Romero in the bulldog choke. He escapes. Garcia hits the pile driver, dragon tamer, as Moxley hits the stomp while Romero's in the dragon tamer and goes out at 15 minutes and 33 seconds. For a street fight, this more than gave you your value for the second match on the show that they came out and they worked this like a, like where they would have been slotted on a pay-per-view if they had 15 minutes.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, on paper, I expected good action out of like an AEW street fight containing a Jon Moxley. And, I thought like that alone would have been very satisfying, but I didn't expect this match to have the sort of narrative implications that it did, because I mean, this match was the entire Death Riders working as the baby faces, like beyond
and
just
kicking
Jon
off
Moxley.
The feud. Like, I think they wanted to start this program off as like super violent and and putting the Death Riders in a baby face light.
Yeah. And to me, this was confirmation that the Death Riders aren't turning on Jon Moxley anytime soon, and instead it's the entire group turning into a babyface team. And this match kind of cemented that for all of them. And I thought they did that really, really well throughout the moments in this match by stacking the odds against Jon Moxley in a 3-on-1 situation as a result of that Yuta chokeslam. They made the whole team really feel like great sympathetic babyfaces. They gave Marina Shafir an incredible babyface moment standing up against Lance Archer and, you know, catching that triangle on her. Like, she... And it's really interesting with her because she would come out later on and be a total heel. But in this moment with the Death Riders, the whole team was getting cheered, including Pat and Claudio, who came out for that big save. I have to say, they made Lance Archer look amazing in this match. I mean, he's been so underutilized for this entire run. But I don't know if it's just because Hobbs left and like it opened up one more spot for a monster. But it feels like they finally came to their senses and like chose to put Lance Archer into that role of being completely unbeatable, requiring two members of the Death Riders to beat him. And it took like Pac coming out with Claudio and that crutch and like slamming his head into like exploding pyro in order to finally lay Archer out. They made him look amazing, and I hope that continues. But it overall just like built up a really strong, I would say, confirmation of a babyface role for the Death Riders in this Don Callis feud.
Yeah, I love the closing sequence. Like that stomp while Romero was in the Dragon Tamer just looked tremendous. Great finish and a really, really solid match. And Moxley goes up to Callis and says, "Tell your boy he knows where to find me."
In reference to who? Which boy?
I guess it's left to be like Okada.
Like, were they teasing that on Collision?
No.
Yeah. So like, so, I mean,
he's got 15 boys, so
that's what I meant. Which boy are you talking about? You know, so I guess we'll see. Who would you like to see?
Jericho. No, I don't know.
I think Okada, sure. But like, this match was great. And it was like the Death Riders versus the AEW like B team. Sorry, the Don Callis family B team. Like, can you imagine this match again, but with like Fletcher, Takeshita, Okada, Andrade, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you can run back a lot of combinations in this whole program. Triangle of Madness cut a promo. Tekla is just getting more and more into this character now. Like, she is by far, like she is She's the great. Speaker of the group.
Yep.
She says, "Statlander, you give title matches to everyone, but I pinned you, and you need a week to prepare. I'm not intimidated by your, quote, alien-ass bullshit routine. I want my title match next week." And then Julia Hart calls for her rematch for the TBS title with Willow Nightingale, which is going to happen on Collision. And then Tekla walks up to the camera and tells them to drown in the taste of toxic. And then she spits in the goddamn camera.
Mm.
This poor camera operator.
Very unhygienic. Would not be allowed during COVID period. AEW. But boy, did it look cool. I thought this was like among the best, if not maybe the best, I think Tekla sounded as a promo in AEW thus far. She's showing improvement.
Your alien ass bullshit routine.
Yeah. Yeah. She's sounding great, really.
FTR against the debuting graphic receiving Jordan Oliver and Alec Price. Non-title. Big Stoke is at ringside and says, "You picked the wrong night to impress the world." And he warns Jake Doyle and Mark Davis, who have their title match next Wednesday, and plugs helpbigstoke.com, which is a fake GoFundMe parody site where he is raising funds.
I'm trying to bring it up right now. Helpbigstoke.com. That's right.
Helpbigstoke.com. Yes. It is a legitimate website. That was
there. It is. Big Stoke needs your help.
This is also a fundraiser from 1999 on GeoCities.
Yep, yep. He's been a victim of multiple...
Angel Fire?
Angel Fire, yes. As a result, Big Stoke finds himself in a situation no one should face. Won't you find it in your heart to help? How your donations are used. Information coming soon. Donated so far, $1,024,278. Okay, interesting. What happens if I actually click donate now?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't click. Well, Shivani warned everyone not to donate to this site.
Oops, something went wrong. You probably weren't thinking about giving enough. Okay.
And they plugged their merch.
All right, I see.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. It would be great if it took you like all the way to like a credit card page, and then maybe that's where like they reveal. Like it's just
there's probably a line where you're committing fraud that they want to stay clear of. So, man, this match, they had 5 minutes, and Alec Price and Jordan Oliver, they had some hiccups in this match, but this was such a fun 5 minute match. It was nonstop action, and I thought Oliver and Price were just fantastic and just in coming in here and making you just so impressed by these guys. And I thought FTR were just such solid opponents to put them with here. Price and Oliver just instantly hit dives. You got these double team maneuvers. There was a Famouser. They cut off the Power and Glory with this top rope Rana onto Cash. And then Oliver gets sent over the top and Price goes for a springboard and he slips. And it actually played in well because he loses his footing after the slip and it leads right into the Shatter Machine in 5 minutes and 15 seconds as FTR unify the AEW and GCW tag titles. I mean, this was unexpected.
How many legs is that?
Four? Yes, four legs.
Four legs. Cool.
The horse, right, as I like to call this
set. The horse. Yeah. Interesting.
I thought this was great. Like it wasn't always like the smoothest, but I really liked the chaotic feel of this. And I thought that Price and Oliver, like, you want to have fun 5 minute matches. And this is a perfect example of it.
As usual with FTR against like high flying teams, I thought it offered great contrast, you know, having like this, like, yeah, again, like, I mean, they very much feel like indie wrestling brawlers with working in indie wrestling high flying style, don't they? And they're facing these like technicians and just like classic style wrestlers in FTR. And it just, I mean, it was a very fun match. And I thought a very unconventional way of introducing a team here, because the presentation would kind of have you believe that it was like, if you didn't know Alec Price and Jordan Oliver, didn't hear about their signing over the past week, this really just felt like FTR versus like a team of jobbers, right? And so you might have gone into this match with the expectation that FTR would have beaten this team in like 2 minutes or something like that. But instead, like, Price and Oliver got like 90% of the offense.
Oh, yeah. This was all about shining them up. This was not about getting FTR ready for next week. Like, it was, you're going in there with the top guys, you're going to lose, but we're going to make you look great in those 5 minutes. And I thought they achieved that. Like, I thought, you know, Price and Oliver, they're real fun additions to this tag division. And, you know, and the clip with MJF, it really got around on Friday, too. So I think a lot of people were familiar with these guys, even if it was just from the Limitless show.
Sure. And the announcers gave them support too by mentioning like they're tag team champions on the indies or like top guys on the indies or whatever. And so the end effect that I thought of the entire presentation is that, like, I'm certainly excited to see more of them, because they kind of like gave you the vibe that they are a Bucks style of tag team with great coordination and great looking unique offense. So I thought this was like a better way of introducing them than just like putting them in some random match on Collision or ROH.
Statlander responds to Tekla. She says, "I'm a lot less cosmic and a lot more killer. And I will take Tekla down. If you're toxic, I'm going to take you down with me. And I'll also have an eliminator match on Collision." And then Willow accepts the challenge by Julia Hart. And Harley has nothing to promote, so she just does some catchphrases. So we've got Statlander in an eliminator bout on Saturday. Statlander against Tekla
again. Statlander against Isla Dawn.
Isla Dawn, yes. They would announce later. And then Willow and Julia Hart on Collision as well, if you can keep all of that straight.
Yeah, so Dawn is on this Saturday. So, like, she's on the tapings.
Yes, correct.
So, like, is she somebody that they...
She must have just been here at the tapings, or they were able to get...
Thankfully, they're in Orlando, where, like, half the rest
of the
world lives anyway.
You're right. Like, if ever there was a place you want to be that you could make some phone calls if you needed, you are probably in the best place per capita.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So after Chris was the one who spit in Jamie Hayter's face, Tekla's taken the spitting gimmick. Remember at the pay-per-view match, it was Statlander spit in Jamie Hayter's face?
I guess it's a bit heelish, yeah.
It was very heelish, but none of it's been followed up with, like, in terms of its, like... I don't know, that's a...
Maybe Tekla saw it and was like, you know what? I'm gonna take mine. That.
Kenny Omega, Josh Alexander. The fun continues. Josh attacks Omega right away, because he knows we got 12 minutes. Let's do as much as we can with this. And he drops Omega on his side on the edge of the apron for our Kenny Omega. Remember, he's had diverticulitis, which did produce a great line from Don Callis saying, he never had any guts anyway.
Ooh, very
so,
nice.
Alexander actually uses a Kamigoye, and no one called attention to it. It's like, that's a pretty significant move to incorporate here from the guy who broke his leg. They go to the floor, and the cement has been exposed, and Omega hits him with the Snapdragon, follows with the Terminator dive, and then starts ramming Josh's head into the desk, and he chases after Don Callis, who runs away through the crowd. Omega returns and gets caught in the ankle lock, and his ankle gets smashed into the ring, and we come back in. Omega makes his comeback, hitting a V-trigger out of nowhere, and they kind of shot this from the floor. Looked really cool. Because
this was actually an uninterrupted, like, almost like 5-minute continuous shot, with the exception of, like,
it went that long.
Yeah, like, with the exception of, like, a cut to follow Callis in the crowd. But otherwise, this whole thing was, like, shot by the ringside camera. It threw, like, again, like, a whole 5-minute stretch. So.
I didn't realize it went that long, but I did, like, this closing sequence. I thought it looked cool. It was, they tried that several times with, like, Lee Fitting in WWE of doing, like, the ringside thing. And they've kind of given up on a lot of those kind of more different production
gimmicky
elements.
Things, yeah.
But he hits a powerbomb and a follow-up V-trigger, lifts him for the one-winged angel, and wins in 11 minutes and 50 seconds as MJF is watching from the back. Kenny's first singles match since All in Texas against Okada. And, man, I feel like a broken record, but this was another really great match on this show.
Yeah, like, he'll have these matches. And, like, just judging by, like, the layoff from singles competition, I think we can infer that, like, you know, he requires a lot of recovery time for these sort of performances. But then you see, like, his next match, and he looks like Kenny Omega, right? Like, this was every bit, I think, the Kenny Omega we still, like, picture in our minds. So, I wonder how much of a toll it takes on him, but he's gearing up for an MJF match, and therefore we assume that he like, I believe his words when he says that he's never felt better in years. I thought this match was excellent, and especially by, like, TV standards, over exceeding, I think, your typical AEW match. Even Josh Alexander wrestled this match like it was him wrestling his dream opponent, because I thought technically it was perfect. And he's also, like, developed this, like, really great sadistic character that I think comes across in the wrestling as well, and makes that submission work look a lot more aggressive. So, great match. And I think the question is, like, there's TV level Kenny Omega, which this was certainly, like, you know, above expectations for, but then there's pay-per-view level Kenny Omega, best belt machine Kenny Omega, which is of an even different standard. So how is he going to look then?
I'd be happy with, like, a handful of, like, these 10-minute TV matches, even if it's in the absence of, like, he has several pay-per-views off, because I think, like, he still went really hard in this match. But, like, you know, there's certainly, you know, the idea of, like, the big Kenny epic that's got to go 25 to 30 minutes, that's pretty daunting, and that's what you will have to do with an MJF. But I found this to be the super TV match that you had here. And then, yeah, cut the promo. This is the best he's felt in years. He's coming for the title, and basically is warning Don Callis, I can take out any of your guys. You don't know what you're dealing with me at this level right now. So it's a great promo of a guy that they feel like they are priming for a really, really big title match with MJF, whether that's Revolution or when they have that targeted for.
Yeah, so, but it seems like he's going to be working his way through the Don Callis family first.
Okay, well, that could be a year.
Well, get in line, like, after John Moxley, I suppose, you know? Does this present an opportunity to have a Moxley-Omega team-up?
Maybe that will be our we're just going to put, like, Darby, Kenny, and Mox, all of them go together with the Death Riders.
Wow. All right. That would be amazing.
Hello, Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit PoisonRana.ca and keep it lit.
And then we got another return, Technique by Taz, going over last week's MJF win over Bandido and a breakdown of the Salt of the Earth, which now we will refer to as the Uday Hishiga Wakigatame.
I'll practice. Yes.
Okay. And then the utilization of an S grip for the label lock that was errantly referred to as the Yes Lock at first by Danielson last week. So, yes.
Cool. I like these.
Megan Bain, Penelope Ford against the Timeless Love Bombs. So early on in this match, Tony's on the floor and Bane military presses Mina and goes to throw her onto Tony. And as the announcer said, maybe she doesn't know her own strength because, dude, she cleared Tony and poor Shirakawa just bounces off the floor. You have never seen a performer like Tony Storm dive down to check on her because she went right over. Tony didn't even have a chance to catch her. Like, man, the first thing that went through my mind was like all the shoulder injuries we've been talking about. And I thought we were just going to be adding to the list here because this was a really nasty fall. And you'll typically, when you're not bracing yourself for that kind of a bump, that is when injuries happen. And here she is thinking she would be caught and was anything but here. And this was not a Tony issue.
And I didn't exactly see the landing, but like Mina had that hand injury too.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was not a pretty landing. Like you just heard this thud behind her. And then what blew my mind is then Penelope Ford, who has literally just come back, her next spot is getting military pressed by Megan to throw her onto both of them. If I was Ford, I'd be like, you know what? We're skipping that one. Let's just get back your timing here. But to her credit, Bane did hit the targets with Penelope Ford here. But all credit to Penelope Ford for being a lot braver than maybe I would have been in that position.
Well, I was going to say, like, I mean, I thought she was, like, certainly taking it easy on Collision. And even in the start of this match, like, she wasn't being that active other than being thrown. But, like, being thrown is, like, this major spot that almost suggests that she's okay. Because otherwise, I don't know why you would attempt something like that.
Well, they continued here. The babyfaces would manage double hip attacks. This was after Mina had been beaten down for quite a period. Bane then lifts Ford. This was really awkward. So they're waiting for Mina to stand up and Bane just like lifts Penelope like a baby and just thrusts her into the air. And she was going for a cutter, but Mina wasn't quite upright. And this just did not look good from what they were attempting. Mina comes back with the Hurricane, goes for the figure four, but is stopped with a lariat from Bane. They hit her with the Doomsday device, and then Ford pins her in 10 minutes and 50 seconds. Storm, meanwhile, is on the floor and can't make the save because Evil Marina has run down, attacking Toni Storm and putting her in mother's milk to prevent the save.
Are you suggesting that like there are two Marina Shafirs?
There's, like, yeah, Marina, she's playing two different characters now. They're two separate people now in the AEW universe.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I thought like they were putting a lot on Bane here to like literally do the heavy lifting for her team.
Well said.
And again, I still wonder if like Ford is still kind of working through some sensitivities as a result of coming back from injury. Because I thought her activity overall was still quite low in comparison to the others. So, I mean, maybe she just needs a bit more ring time to get that confidence back up to take a bigger role on the team. But they were relying on Bane throwing her a lot. That sort of was like the move, right? You know, like I'm going to throw my opponent like Spike Dudley and hope for the best. So I thought it was like a, in the context of the other matches on this show, it was a very average match, even though maybe when you just watch it on its own, you could even consider it to be good.
Then we got the big Excalibur rundown. So for Collision, all taped Wednesday night, Hangman Page against Shibata, Andrade El Idolo against Magnus, Kyle Fletcher and Takeshita against Austin and Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn is back.
Yeah, did they explain this somehow?
No, no, they were just, they were back, and I think they explained, they said one of the teams is undefeated together, which I didn't.
Like, this feels like one of those, we don't have everybody here, Billy, get your boots.
I mean, that
working.
Very well may have been the case of just, like, who are bodies to fill out this show? They did have Claudio and Roderick Strong, which was going, this was Roderick beat Hechicero at Arena Mexico last Friday to get the heavyweight title shot on Collision. So they are doing that this week. Jake Doyle and Mark Davis will be in action. So squash. Willow against Julia Hart for the TBS title. And then, yes, Chris Statlander versus Isla Dawn in an eliminator bout.
The episode of, like, Unreal on this particular edition of Dynamite, I think, would be so interesting.
Yeah, just someone, hey, did you check the weather app for Arlington this weekend? It's not looking good. Mm. And then Dynamite next week, we have three title matches with FTR against Doyle and Mark Davis. Mark Briscoe and El Clone, that was originally set for Saturday, is getting bumped to Wednesday. And Statlander Tekla for the women's title. And that is in Austin, Texas next week, weather permitting.
Cool. Yeah. Mm.
Swerve Strickland and Kevin Knight is our final match with MJF alone in a private box. He was surrounded by Hollywood Row. And Kevin Knight is landing some offense early on, and he gets very cocky, doing Swerve's dance. And then Swerve...
Oh, by the way, we should mention this. Swerve was wearing a band on his arm for the producer Prophet, who passed away this week.
Oh, I didn't understand who this was.
Yeah, who produced his theme songs, both of them.
Oh,
and,
really?
And had worked with Kanye in the past. And it seems like a really, well, it's incredibly sad and seemed very sudden. His last post on his Instagram was with Tony Khan at a Jags game. So they said he was dedicating this match to him.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So Knight does the Swerve dance and then gets chopped off the buckle and sent to the floor. And then the horsecock chant begins. And Swerve is just like, what the hell? And I don't think this is the last time we will have a babyface reacting to that chant like this. That's my prediction. Swerve hits a flatliner, and then Knight avoids the house call, hits his twisting splash. He got so much offense in here. This was not all that unlike the FTR match where, I mean, Kevin Knight obviously much more established, but this was a match very much about let's get Kevin Knight as over as possible before he's going to lose the fall. And they did a lot here. Swerve caught him for a DVD onto the edge of the apron, and then he applies a dragon sleeper, which Knight manages to get out of, and then Knight just goes into overdrive. He hit this incredible springboard Rana off the top, and the place went nuts. Hits the coast-to-coast, and then a UFO splash, and Swerve just gets his foot on the rope. Tremendous sequence, and then Kevin Knight hits the house call. I love this spot. And he runs the ropes, and Swerve hits the house call in midair, hits a vertebraker, and a big pressure to win and beat Kevin Knight. Really tremendous. And MJF is just watching on here and looking dejected because he was hoping Kevin Knight would play spoiler and beat Swerve to eliminate a future title challenger. So you're certainly building up a lot of interesting contenders, whether this is a multi-man, you go through several of these matches. But what I liked about this show was that it focused on, you know, Bayley lost, Kevin Knight lost, but I did think like they still had really great performances here, and
but they gained a new name, John.
They gained a new name, and that really is the end goal. Like even like Josh Alexander in losing to Omega, like I did not think that these were positives for all of them, and I would put Kevin Knight arguably among the highest. Like you can certainly see a lot in him, and I thought he really rose to the occasion in the main event spot here on what was a very loaded show of having to follow what they did.
Yeah. Well, certainly like Tony Khan and also I think the AEW audience very much subscribes to the idea that you can lose a match, but if you have a great match, you're still going to get over, right? Isn't that what like Triple H said on Unreal or something? Didn't he say that? I don't know. Anyway, but it is true in many of these cases. Listen, are you going to be looking at Kevin Knight as a world title contender level like guy as a result of a match like this. No, you're not. But not everybody can be in that position. And at the very least, like you want the person on the losing end coming out with some sort of growth. And I feel like these performances in totality like offer that for people like Knight and Bayley.
But and this one specifically, like there should be a time, whether it's in a year, 18 months, that Kevin Knight should win. And for all that reason, like he should not have won this match. But I really do hope that, you know, 18 months from now, Kevin Knight's not in the same position. And that is sometimes, like, in AEW, you don't always see that progression of talent. You hope that a Knight, when he does get that win, it's significant.
But there is certainly concern for that happening, because there are actually several Kevin Knights, right? Like, Bandido, I think, is struggling to, like, break into, you know, the top mix. You're working on Brody King right now, you know? Not to mention just, like, Andrade is coming in, and you're trying to fit Kenny. You got to fit Ospreay. And
Billy Gunn's like, back.
Billy Gunn, that's right, yeah. Tanahashi retired, but Billy Gunn coming back.
He outlasted Tanahashi, you're right, after their classic in 2017.
But like, I thought this was a very enjoyable edition of Dynamite. It's one
I thought
like,
this was a great episode overall.
Man, I had anticipation for a lot of the matches, more sort of for like personal reasons, just knowing that like Alexander was really wanted that Omega match, finally got it. But like Joe Bailey, I thought was of great quality. What I didn't expect was how much I would love Death Riders versus Don Callis family as a street fight. And also for the fact that like it was able to very successfully present the Death Riders as baby faces. So top to bottom, especially even knowing like all that might have been going on backstage and scrambling to put these back-to-back tapings together, I was very impressed with this show alone.
This had to be a very chaotic one as well. And yeah, it'll be a question of like keeping the crowd up. Like there was, you know, I would say they were into the Omega match. Like it wasn't like it was a dead crowd, but it was one that, you know, certainly they dipped in the women's match. It kind of took them a little to get into the main event, but we'll see how that translates. But yeah, this, I'm certain that this was quite a challenging day when all of a sudden you have to double your taping on a couple hours notice as well. So there you have it. Those were our
before
thoughts.
Before we go, I did want to mention we've been having some issues earlier this week for people who subscribe to our free feed on Apple Podcasts. Issues with like Rewind to Raw, NXT not up populating. That seems to have been resolved right now. But if you do encounter any sort of issues, you can always just like text us or not text us, but DM us or no, tag us. Tag us on like whatever X or Blue Sky and let us know.
Yes, Wei has been working on all things.
We're going to take a bite of both parts of the apple.
Podcast.
I was waiting for that to loop.
Yeah, I figured.
To send us into a Shapiro vortex.
I'll also remind people that Wei and I just put out our review of episode 1 of Unreal, focusing on the return of Becky Lynch at WrestleMania this past year, her feud with Lyra Valkyria, Seth Rollins, and Pat McAfee's match with Gunther. So we're going to be putting these out each Tuesday. So
you're in the post-wrestling cafe.
On the cafe, those will be a Tuesday release. And next week we'll do the episode on R-Truth. So
yeah,
that's,
but this
that's
one, up. This episode we're actually going to put out on the free feed on Friday morning. So those of you who want a sampling of our Unreal discussions, you can wait, check that out. But then those of you in the cafe, every single Tuesday we'll be doing one of these.
Yes. Today, we did Pollock and Thurston, and him and I went through the latest on the Ring Boy lawsuit with some responses from the defendants, including Vince and Linda McMahon. I'm sorry that Vince McMahon just...
Ren is getting really good at these thumbnails.
Oh, he's on another level. But we also went through the Netflix engagement report. It's the most anticipated Excel spreadsheet that comes out twice a year from Netflix, going through all of its programming. So, a breakdown of all WWE viewing stats, as well as many things Netflix related, including an article in the Hollywood Reporter. So all of that was covered on today's Pollock and Thurston. And of course, if you are looking for some soothing listening, I do recommend this month's installment of The Wellness Policy. Goals for the year, goals beyond. Sometimes I just listen and I feel like I'm eavesdropping.
At this point, I think we do the show for you, John, honestly. Like we, I at least
it's my
I
only request.
Show. I do the show like thinking in the back of my mind that John Pollock will be listening to this. All right, let's put on our best effort and have a great conversation. And I feel like I did that with my friends Jordan and Neil, who, well, it was primarily Jordan kind of speaking about, you know, something that really inspired him to like refocus on his, taking his career to a new level this year. So that plus a bit of a Egg McMuffin discussion.
How did you feel about the oatmeal at the beginning?
Oh, that was particularly where I was thinking about you. I'm sure I didn't love it, but I knew you would have hated hearing Jordan eat oatmeal on the microphone.
Yeah, it was.
Sorry. Surprised you lasted beyond that.
It should be one of his goals, I think, for the new year. But do catch it. It's always a must listen.
And of course, last thing. This is where we shove our plugs, by the way, towards the end when we know we've got you guys. You guys are settled. You know, you're not going anywhere. Up Next was, I thought, excellent. You hear Braden and Davey speak about NXT every single week, and they are going through a lot of growing pains, I would suggest, on the show, which makes for very entertaining podcasting. That plus they talk
a lot.
Well, yeah,
there might be some more goings, according to Booker T. I mean, this is not it, okay? They've got the pink slips out.
That's it, yeah. So just a shout out to those guys at Poison Rana.
Tanahashi Okada retrospective is coming your way on Thursday. Rewind to SmackDown Friday with Wei and Neil. And then Saturday night's main event will be late Saturday night. We will be going on to chat about the show from Montreal. So all of that is coming your way this weekend. And we'll have a UFC 324 review Sunday with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon. That is it for us here on the YouTube feed. But buckle up, everyone. It's time for Forum Time.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.